This is The Takeaway with Melissa Harris-Perry.
At the beginning of April, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released a report stating that global greenhouse gas emissions are continuing to rise. This puts the world at risk for more climate change-related issues unless immediate action is taken. Extreme weather events are likely to force millions from their homes, creating climate refugees across the world and right here in the United States. In advance of these perils, some are trying a new process known as managed retreat.
Managed retreat is a category of adaptation options to deal with the effects of climate change, and it involves moving people, homes, other infrastructure away from some of the most hazardous places in order to reduce risk and keep people safe.
That's A.R. Siders, a climate change adaptation expert and assistant professor at the University of Delaware. I spoke with Siders about what managed retreat is and how it has been implemented across the U.S.
This is a socially negotiated process. That's, you know, academic jargon for it's something that's decided by the community, by the power structures that are in place. It's not just an engineering decision when we say some place is too dangerous. So most of the managed retreat that I work on in the U.S. is not like the sort of infamous green dot map. Most of it is voluntary. And so it's homeowners who are themselves saying, hey, this home is too dangerous. I am no longer willing to live through flood after flood after flood. Or this is the, you know, in some cases, 16th or 34th time I've had to rebuild my home after a disaster. I'm tired. I don't want to live here. We need to help in order to get out. And we need help in order to make sure that when we leave, we don't just have another family coming in and making this place dangerous. But the point you raise is really important, that there's a technical element. Sometimes the geography just doesn't work to put in a wall to keep someplace safe. At the same time, you know, it's not just a technical decision to say this place is too dangerous. There's also that social component where we say, well, how much money are we willing to spend to make it safe? Or there will always be some level of risk. How much risk are you willing to live with? Some people are willing to kayak out of their homes to the grocery store. That's fine. I'm not, you know, but some people are, right? And so it's all about an individual or a community level of risk that they're willing to accept.
It seems to me there's got to be at least one more player when we start talking about risk and how much risk we are willing to accept, and that is insurance companies. Mm-hmm. You know, there comes a point where they are unwilling to cover, whether it is residential homes or whether it is commercial businesses. And once insurance companies are out, then it gets harder to even have a grocery store to kayak to.
That is a really good point. And this is one reason that in the US, most of our flood insurance is actually run through the federal government. Back in the 60s, flood risk was becoming so problematic that a lot of insurance companies said, hey, we can't insure in these areas. And so the federal government took over. And on the one hand, not being able to get an insurance policy is a really good signal to a homeowner that, hey, this place is dangerous. On the other hand, we don't want the lack of insurance to force people out of their homes where they've lived for a long time. So right now, wildfire is going to be facing the same sort of tension of should we have a federally subsidized or a government subsidized form of insurance for these places? Because you want to support people living in these places. On the other hand, you don't want to subsidize people living in places where they're going to be exposed to extreme danger.
In the past few years, we know that there have been California coastal cities like Del Mar and Pacifica that have actually rejected managed retreat as a solution. I'm wondering, when we're talking about those kinds of communities, very different than the Lower Ninth Ward, what are some of the reasons for not wanting to retreat in this way?
I think it's very difficult for communities. It's always difficult for communities to think about the end of their community, right? Or that their community might change in fundamental ways. And in some cases, it might mean that this community ceases to exist. I think that's a really difficult thing for any community to face, is how are we going to change? And the decision to not think about managed retreat, I think, is problematic because we need to start thinking long-term about these issues. And there's a lot of places like Del Mar that don't have to retreat today, but very well might have to think about that in the next century. So taking tools off the table for the future, right, can really limit our options down the road. Reasons people don't want to think about retreat run the gamut from very personal reasons, like I've lived here for generations, or my grandfather built this house, to things that are more place-based. This is the only place I can afford to live that's near my job or it's near family, to I like the, you know, recreational activities that are nearby. Or it can come down to finances. Maybe this is the only community where a person could afford to buy a home, or the town might be thinking, hey, we can't afford to retreat because every home that disappears, that's lost property tax revenue. There's a huge range of reasons why people are, why they live in the places they do and why they care about those places.
I'm wondering if there are, if there's either discursive ways or even more sort of tangible selective incentives that help both elected officials and community members think in longer term ways about their communities and climate change.
One just real easy fix, I think, sometimes is the way we talk about these risk exposures. We're building here in Delaware, we're building a lot of homes in the 10-year floodplain. And the 10-year floodplain, if you do the statistics, it means you have a 1 in 10 chance of flooding every single year. That still doesn't sound so bad. But if you calculate that out over a 30-year mortgage, you have a 96% chance of flooding. So, you know, if we told people like, hey, you're buying this house, and we didn't say it's in a 1 in 10-year floodplain, but instead we said you have a 96% chance that your house will flood before you've paid for it, I think that might shift the way people think about this. So sometimes just the language we use to talk to people about these risks, I think, can be really important in making this feel like something that's happening today. And then also just being really transparent about it. You see so many stories of people saying, before I bought this house, I wish I'd known that it was going to flood. And states need to do a better job of requiring people to disclose that risk to people who are buying homes. And then home buyers hopefully can do a better job of trying to learn about those risks.
We've talked a lot about flooding. What are the other risks that one might be retreating from?
Major retreat as an adaptation idea works for all different kinds of climate change hazards. So this could be high erosion rates. This could be wildfire. There's some talk about the idea that this could also apply to drought or heat. At the moment, we see most people discussing and most relocation happening because of flooding. I think partly because it repeats so frequently, right? So if you have a wildfire and you think, oh, but it won't come back for another 30 years, maybe you don't worry about that. But a flood could happen this year and next year and again and again and again. And then it's also very spatial, right? You sort of know if you're in the floodplain, it's going to hit over and over. And I think that repeat hazard is what really convinces people at the end that these areas are potentially dangerous, or it's what makes them rethink the weight. You know, are they willing to accept that in order to stay?
I must say that when our takeaway intern first pitched this to us and said the words managed retreat, I was like, what is this about, like, you know, Russia leaving Ukraine? It sounded like, you know, like you're losing a war, like time to get out. And is that what it means, that we've decided not to fight climate change anymore? We're just going to keep moving in and in and in until we're battling over the last pieces of arable land that are left?
No, it doesn't mean that. But I love this military imagery. I just want to pause and think about that for a minute, that we're treating this as though we're fighting a war against the ocean, right?
And, well, we're going to lose that one. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. In the history of wars that maybe weren't a good idea, fighting a war against the ocean is sort of classically not a great idea. Yeah, so this idea that we're going to win against the ocean, I mean, sure, but also, right, we could think about other strategies. And so retreat, even in a military sense, retreat doesn't necessarily mean defeat, right? It doesn't mean you give up. You know, think about very classic retreats, right? Dunkirk retreating, or the retreat of Washington across the Delaware River, right? We have these retreats, and they didn't mean we lost those wars. They meant exactly what it sounds like, that we took a step back. We realized, hey, maybe this isn't the right direction to go, regroup and think about a different direction. My favorite quote about retreat actually comes from a U.S. Marine Corps general. He's famous for leading a major retreat in Korea and then saying, retreat, heck. Well, he didn't say heck, but heck, we're just advancing in a new direction. And it's so wonderfully oorah, but it's also really true that retreat isn't about losing the battle or giving up. It's about choosing to go in a new direction. And that's what makes me feel actually optimistic when I think about managed retreat. It's about choosing to say, let's build the new housing, but let's build new housing you know, on the bluff where it can look over the ocean, or let's build new housing slightly farther back and have a great public beach where everyone could access the beach, not just the people who can afford to live on it. Or let's talk about using the beach, but maybe not having to put our homes and all of our financial assets and our family safety at risk, right? It's choosing to think about spatial and the ways we engage with the coast or with wildfire areas or forests or any of these hazards in a different way. And I think that, you know, if we can think about retreat not as we're losing this battle with the ocean, but we're making different choices, I think that can open up a lot of creativity and a lot of space for us to have exciting conversations, not just depressing ones.
Okay, quick pause. You're going to be back with the takeaway right after this break.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and we've been discussing planned relocation of communities affected by climate change. And while managed retreat is an option some communities are willing to take, there are others who want to stay on their land, in their neighborhoods, and in the homes they built, like Hilton Kelly.
I'm the founder and director of the Community in Power and Development Association located in Port Arthur, Texas, on the Gulf Coast.
Let's take a little peek into life in Port Arthur.
Port Arthur is located about 100 miles east of Houston, Texas. Basically, Port Arthur is surrounded by levees, bayous, and what have you. We have alligators, we have garfish, we have all sorts of things you would find in the southern swamps and bayous. And Port Arthur is a very unique place with very unique foods and atmospheres.
Hilton also told us that his community is facing serious issues.
Some of the storms that we are facing, we believe that's due to climate change. We're seeing an unprecedented number of hurricanes coming into the Gulf every year. Back in 2005, Hurricane Rita was the first hurricane Port Arthur had seen in more than about 15 years. Prior to Hurricane Rita hitting Port Arthur, Katrina, 2 months earlier, had hit New Orleans and devastated New Orleans. And so Katrina came into the Gulf, and here it is, 2 months afterwards, Hurricane Rita came into the Gulf, and there were quite a few others that were not as strong as Hurricane Rita and Katrina. But one thing we're also seeing, besides a large number of hurricanes coming into the Gulf every year since 2005, is a large amount of flooding. Hurricane Harvey devastated my home, and I live in what they consider a no-flood zone on a higher ground situation in East Port Arthur. And in 2017, our home was inundated with water up to 3 feet. And so needless to say that our home was basically destroyed and we had to rebuild. But on the west end of Port Arthur, Texas, I mean, people had to be flown out of their area by military helicopters. There were amphibious vehicles that went into the area to rescue people out of the apartment complexes. It was a huge, huge mess on the west end of town.
Despite the storms and the flooding, the community of Port Arthur has rebuilt. They're not thinking of leaving anytime soon.
But the consensus is many people would like to stay in their area if it's doable. We want to keep our neighborhood together. We want to keep our community intact and our culture and our way of life. And one thing I do believe is that, you know, if we can manage to get the support that we need here on the Gulf to fight climate change, to fight sea level rise, that is preferable. But if there is no hope on turning the tide when it comes to climate change, when it comes to sea level rise, then we have no choice but to move further inland. But I think one has to stop and take a look at the fact that if we continue to go inward because of sea level rise and hurricanes and climate change issues, then where are we all going to end up? Because there's coastal areas on the East Coast, in the Atlantic, on the Pacific side, and on the West Coast, and now we're like that South Coast. So I think it would be behoove of our federal government, our state government, and foundations to assist communities on the Gulf of Mexico, even on the East Coast and the West Coast, with building stronger, helping to sustain those coastal areas as much as we can, because we must stay in place to fight for the reversal of climate change issues. If there's no one on the coast, then who will be here to fight?
Thanks to Hilton Kelly from the Community Empower and Development Association. And thanks to our producers, Katarina Barton and Michelle Liu, for their work on this segment.